His PhD at Utrecht was philosophy and aesthetics. And over to you.
Thank you, William. We first thank the organizer for inviting me. It's good to be a parameter. The title of my talk is Deep Hidden Variables. And I will reconsider the well-known local hidden variable program, which Philip already introduced to us, and also the CSH inequality. And I'll try to give some elementary investigations. I hope to show that these give new results. And I think they have general repercussions, so we learn something general about quantum theory. And these are intended to deepen our understanding of what it takes to violate the Bell inequality and how it relates to quantum and no-signaling correlations. And this is part of what I would call the recent paradigm change to study quantum mechanics from the outside, not from the inside. This is a thing Philip didn't really mention, but I think it's also part of Foundation's research. Let me dwell a little bit on this. So what does this mean, to study quantum mechanics from the outside, not just from the inside? I guess the motto would be like the following. In order to understand quantum mechanics, it's useful to demarcate those phenomena that are essentially quantum from those that are more generally non-classical. So one investigates theories that are neither classical nor quantum. So one explores the space of possible theories from a larger theoretical point of view. And it's nicely said by Aronson. He asked the question whether quantum mechanics is an island in theory space. And if so, can we locate it? Can we locate which parts of a theoretical landscape belongs uniquely to quantum mechanics and which do not? And doing this, many others have found that many non-classical properties of quantum mechanics are generic of a large family of physical theories. So instead of regarding quantum theory to be special for having such generic features, a better attitude might be to regard classical mechanics special for not having it. That's what I would call the paradigm change. And I hope to modestly contribute today to this program. Okay, and my methodological morale for this talk will be the following, taken from John Bell, who said that it's precisely in cleaning up intuitive ideas for mathematics that one is likely to throw out the baby with the bathwater. And I think this is a good observation. So I'll keep things simple, and I'll use a minimal of mathematics in order not to throw out the baby with the bathwater. And I will consider the so-called simplest case of a Bell experiment, the so-called EPR Bohm setup. And this has been studied for over 40 years. But still, even this simplest case is not so simple after all. I hope to show that still some more technical results can be discovered that have general repercussions. OK, so what will be the outline for the rest of the talk? First, I'll have a review of the local variable models for the EPR Bohm setup. Philip already gave us a part of this, so I'll be very brief on that. Then I'll revisit the CGH inequality and derive an interesting new inequality that is very familiar to the CGH inequality. And then I'd like to go beyond the local invariable program and quantum mechanics. And in order to do that, I will distinguish the surface and the subsurface level. And I will extend my investigation from non-locality to no signaling. OK, and then I'll wrap up. OK, so this will be very brief. I think most of you are familiar with it. But this is the simplest 2x2x2 Gedanken experiment, where you consider two systems, two possible measurements, two possible outputs. So two possible measurements, BB prime, two possible outputs, plus and minus 1. And there's two systems, 1 and 2. And they could be possibly characterized by further degrees of freedom, which often are denoted by lambda. And so it's the particle pair and so maybe some other relevant degrees of freedom are captured in some physical states, often called beables. And this model is supposed to give probabilities for outcomes A and B when measuring observables AB on a system in a particular hidden variable state lambda. So these are the objects we will consider. And we're going to try and reproduce the empirical accessible probabilities that quantum mechanics gives us. So we average over some probability density on our hidden variables. So here we generally allow still for maybe some non-local influences in our hidden variable model, or that our distribution of the hidden variable can still depend on the settings chosen. But local realism imposes conditions on such a model, and one is that the condition of factorizability, or as Bell calls it, local causality. I think you've seen it before. I'll go briefly through it. The idea is that this joint probability factorizes in two separate probabilities, each pertaining to one of the systems only. And a further assumption is something which Philip also mentioned. We're going to exclude some conspiracy theories that are going to exclude retrocausality or superdeterminism. So our distribution of the hidden variables is independent of the settings chosen. We can choose our settings freely. There's no correlation to the hidden variable. And as a consequence of these assumptions, something I think you've all seen before, so we look at the conjunction of the two, all our empirically accessible correlations must have this form. These are called local, and the CHH inequality has to be obeyed. We've seen this before by Philip. Okay. I will drive the new inequality, which is relevant to this particular setup. In order to do that, I'm going to consider two so-called CHH polynomials. So these are the four products of observables that feature in the inequalities. And this is the primed version, where double prime means we consider the original observable. And it's known that for all quantum states, we have this inequality between the expectation value of these two quantities. And since this is a linear sum and the expectation value is linear, we in fact consider the linear sum of these four expectation values. And if we look at the squares of both, it's bounded by 8. And that, in fact, implies and already strengthens the CHH, the Tsiolson inequality, something which Philip also mentioned, namely that quantum mechanics can have an upper bound of 2 square root 2, for example, using entangled states. And quantum states, which are separable, non-entangled, they must obey the original Bell inequality with an upper bound of 2. Okay. But in order to get the maximum bound 2 square root 2, in order to saturate the CHH inequality, we must use entanglement, but important for my investigation, we must use locally orthogonal states. So, locally orthogonal measurements. And that means, in the case of qubits, these measurements are anti-commuting. So the anti-commutator is 0. And in such a case, it follows from quantum theory that for any spin state on a two-dimensional Hilbert space, and for any orthogonal triple of observables, say A prime, A double prime, which are orthogonal, we have this bound on the square of the expectation values. And this implies a strengthening for separable states. Separable states also have to obey this inequality, where rho is a separable state, a non-entangled state. And then we get the following quadratic inequality. Instead of the value 8, we find that our sum of the squares is bounded by the value 2. And that implies, for the linear inequalities, these two quantities are bounded by the square root 2. So that's a factor square root 2 stronger than the original CHH inequality. Okay, so let me put all these inequalities into a nice diagram. So here we have one of those CHH polynomials. Here's the other one, the primed version. And if we now look at, and we have our observables non-restricted. We can have any choice of observables. These three bounds hold, where Q is the set of all quantum states. So for any quantum state, this quantity has to be bounded by 8, which implies the Tsiolson inequality. This, in effect, this is the largest black circle, and the Tsiolson inequality is, in fact, the largest outer square. And all quantum states are within the larger square, but in fact, they're within the circle. So it strengthens the Tsiolson inequality. And separable states have to lie within the inner square with values 2. But in case we want to maximally violate the Bell inequality, suppose we want to reach, say, this point, 2 square root 2, or that point, we have to choose our settings locally orthogonal. So we have to choose our settings locally orthogonal. bad hockey player. So that means if we choose our settings locally or orthogonal, we get a stronger bound. All separable states lie within the inner blue circle. And these imply the linear inequalities, which are depicted as this inner blue square. Okay. So if we want to test for entanglement, we can test, of course, this inequality. And if we violate it, we know we have entanglement. We violate the original bound equality. It can only be done by an entangled state. But in fact, choosing orthogonal observables, it suffices to violate this inequality. So if you're outside of this blue circle, within this red square, you can still detect entanglement, although you cannot violate the original bound equality. I think there's a question, right? Yes.
Yeah, there's some sort of strengthened version of the Cyrillstone inequality, which it looks like the original, but it has arc signs in it or something. Do you know where that fits on this diagram? Are you familiar with that one?
I think I know what you mean. That's
is that equivalent to what you
mean? No, I think that inequality you refer to, you're trying to bound the quantum body to find a bound on all possible quantum states.
Yeah.
And there you consider a higher dimensional space than just me. I'm only considering two possible linear sums of observables. There you consider four, I believe. Okay. So back to entanglement detection. If you want to test for entanglement,
the correlator.
I'd like. I don't know which inequality you refer to, so
okay.
I'd like to see it.
Okay.
If you want to test for entanglement and would like to test quantum mechanics against the local invariable theory, those two things are inequivalent. And that's a thing which is not new. Werner has already shown that. It's a feature called hidden non-locality. And we can see it's quite generic, because all quantum states outside this blue circle, but within the red square, are entangled. But you won't be able to violate the Bell inequality, so you can construct a hidden variable model for these correlations. This generalizes to the multipartite case. So this is the bound on the Merman operator, which is or the Merman polynomial, a multipartite generalization of this. And I've normalized the value for local hidden variable models to 2, and we see quantum mechanics exponentially violating this inequality. But separable states, which is this one, in the case of orthogonal observables, exponentially drops off. We see that in order to reach this region, we need more and more entangled states, more and more entanglement to cross this region and get a violation of the multipartite Bell inequality. Okay. So usually, Bell inequalities are interesting only if there exists a certain quantum state that violates it. However, we here see that it's also very interesting to ask not what quantum states violate a certain Bell inequality, but what quantum states cannot violate it, and by what factor. And the maximum value of a multipartite Bell inequality obtainable by separable quantum states exponentially decreases with respect to the maximum value obtainable by local invariable models. So as the number of particles increases, a larger and larger set of local invariable correlations need entanglement to be reproducible by quantum mechanics. And what's responsible for this is precisely the feature of incompatible or complementary observables, which are encoded by intercommutativity in this case, because we consider perfectly orthogonal observables. And this is by itself a non-classical feature, but it allows for the strange fact, what I would call it, a less than classical feature arises in quantum mechanics. Separable states drop exponentially off, go exponentially below the quantum, the local invariable correlations. Okay, so this was still within the original quantum mechanical and local invariable setup. I'd like to now go beyond that original setup. In order to do so, I'll define a few further quantities. One is what I would call surface probabilities. Those are just probability to find outcome A or B, given measurement capital A, capital B. And these can be determined by relative frequencies or predicted by certain theories. Or we can have what I would call subsurface probability. These have are conditioned on a hidden variable which is seen or are regarded to be below the surface. In the end, you average over this hidden variable and try and see what you can reproduce. And there's a few different kinds of correlations at the surface I'd like to compare now. One is the local. We've seen this before. So this is the surface correlation. And here we find subsurface correlations. And a local correlation is the following, one which for which the surface correlations has this form. It can be reproduced in such a way. With quantum correlations at the surface, those you find by considering a quantum state at certain POVM measurements on your quantum state, and then you apply the usual trace rule. And we have no signaling correlations. Philip already referred to that. I think it's an over the last 10 years, people have been investigating these more and more, no signaling correlations. These are the correlations where you consider the joint correlation, you sum over the outcomes, so we get the marginal probability distribution, but it can still depend on B in general. But a no signaling correlation, you require that that's not the case. So independent of whether you have B or B prime here, the marginals are the same. For if it was not the case, you could choose a different setting at the faraway station, and you change the marginal probabilities, and in effect, you'd allow for signaling. So these are the no signaling correlations. And I'm going to consider deterministic correlations, where each of these are either 0 or 1. So no intermediate values. Yes?
Why do you have a B up in a superscript rather than just another condition, you know? Why not write a P of A given, P of little a given big A comma B?
It doesn't matter.
The same thing?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That just threw me off.
Okay. Yeah, I prefer this notation, but it doesn't matter. Okay. So I'd like to now present the following theorem that relates surface and subsurface levels. And it's the following, that no theory can be deterministic, non-local, and no signaling. So we've just seen the three definitions of these three correlations. There can be no theory that predicts correlations that are both, or yeah, that are deterministic as well as non-local, as well as no signaling. So any non-local correlation that is no signaling must be indeterministic. It must be that the outcomes are only probabilistically predicted, and such as, for example, quantum mechanics itself, or Bohmian mechanics, because it reproduces quantum mechanics. And another corollary of this theorem is that any deterministic correlation, so they're either 0 or 1, that is non-local, must also be signaling. Yes?
There might be another notational confusion. When you say 0, 1, you mean the set that consists only of 0 and 1, don't you?
Sorry, this should be the set, not the interval.
It looks like the unit interval, which looks like an empty statement.
No, this should be only 0 and 1.
Only 0 and 1.
You're right. Okay, how much time do I have?
8 minutes? 13 minutes.
Okay. Well, in that case, I'm going to go through the proof.
well, I'm just kidding.
Well, normally, you know, you best skip proofs in talks, I think. This is such a simple one, I think it's worth going through. And I have time, I think. So, using also a result by Mazanis and collaborators. So we're going to prove that any deterministic no-signaling correlation must be local. So we're going to consider a deterministic probability distribution. We can give something that's deterministic. And that means that the outcomes, A and B, they're just functions of the settings. So we can write the outcome function of both settings. But we can still allow for signaling. We can still allow a dependency on the faraway setting B. But now we're going to suppose there's no signaling. Then we're going to rewrite our deterministic distribution in the following. We can rewrite it in the following way. This joint distribution is just this large delta function, which factorizes. And
this is our deterministic probability distribution. It's nothing but these two marginal probabilities, and applying no signaling, the independence of B here is dropped, the independence of A there is dropped. And this is just a local distribution. And thereby, any deterministic no signaling correlation must be local. So it's, you know, quite elementary proof. So let's apply this now. Let's again consider Bohmian mechanics. Because of the Bayes mode signaling and give rise to non-local correlations, you know, it wants to reproduce quantum mechanics, and this violates CTH inequality. And by this theorem, it must predict the outcomes only probabilistically. So although fundamentally, at a deeper invariable level, deterministic, that must necessarily be predictively indeterministic. So at the surface level, it has to be indeterministic, whereas at the subsurface level, it might be completely deterministic. And that's a feature of any such theory, which is both non-signaling and non-local. So no Bohmian demon can have perfect control over the hidden variables and still be non-local and non-signaling at the surface, as quantum mechanics requires. And it's not specific to Bohmian mechanics. Any deterministic theory that obeys no signaling and gives non-local correlations must have this feature. It must predict the outcomes of measurement indeterministically. And it's independent of whether you are going to reproduce quantum mechanics or not. Okay. So far we've seen that requiring no signaling in conjunction with some other conditions has strong consequences. What if we solely require no signaling? Can we find a non-trivial constraint that follows from no signaling alone? And the CTH inequality does not suffice. It does not give us a non-trivial constraint. Because no signaling correlations can maximally violate it up to the algebraic maximum value of 4. And the so-called PR boxes, PR stands for best squared Borelli, something we'll also refer to, give such a value, yet they are no signaling. So the CTH inequality does not suffice, but an analog does suffice. So let's consider this inequality, where I've replaced two of the product expectation values by, say, marginal expectation values. Any such any theory that obeys this inequality, any correlation that violates this inequality is signaling. So if we look at the last line, a correlation that violates this has the feature that the marginal probability for finding outcome B given setting capital B is different than at the other side. There's it's unequal, depending on whether you measure A at the faraway station or A prime. So no signaling theories obey this, quantum mechanics obeys this, local invariant theories obey this, but the only theories that do not obey this are signaling theories. And so this inequality, I'm going to put it to work. I think there's more work. It can perhaps do more work, but I think a little interesting result can already be gained from this inequality. And it's the following. Suppose you want to reproduce these perfect correlations and perfect anti-correlations by a no-signaling theory. So in the case where our settings are identical, for example, we measure spin in the same direction A and B on both systems, then we find anti-correlation. In case the settings are opposite, we find correlation. And of course, we know the singlet state quantum mechanics, with its singlet state, give correlations like that. But for the moment, I'm not going to assume anything, any quantum mechanics. But since correlations exist, they're predicted by quantum mechanics. But it could be that other theories also have such correlations. Then applying the no-signaling constraint gives a strong bound on the marginals. So any correlation that obeys this, and you require it to be reproducible by no-signaling, has to give these two constraints. So let's state that the marginal expectation values, part 1 and 2, must add up to 0 and for measurements in the same direction. And individually, they are odd functions, the settings. Okay, and now we're going to assume further that our theory treats both systems the same, perhaps because we think they're identical, or for some other reason. So the outcome when you measure on system one in a certain direction, it's the same as you measure on the second system. And in that case, the marginal expectation values must vanish. So the expectations of the individual, of the measurements on the single systems are zero. And that means that all marginal probabilities are uniformly distributed. They're all, the probability to obtain outcomes, say, plus and minus, is the same. So what have we gained? Any non-signaling theory that reproduces perfect anti-correlations and perfect correlations for all measurement directions and that treats two systems identically must have uniform distributed marginals. And for this, no appeal to quantum mechanics was needed. But if you do, I think even stronger conclusions can be derived. And I've just spoken to Roger Kolbeck about it. He will speak on it Friday. And he told me he's not assuming any quantum mechanics. So there's some interesting result there to be seen on Friday. Okay. So I'm going to wrap up now. So I'll just consider the simplest case. Two parties, two settings, two outcomes. And it's not so simple. It still gives rise to a lot of new results when studied from a larger point of view, from the outside point of view. So we've seen that non-commutativity gives a less than classical effect. Quantum mechanics generally needs entanglement to reproduce a lot of invariable correlations. And we've seen that the conjunction of non-locality and non-signaling, as is the case for quantum mechanics itself, is very stringent. The surface probabilities cannot be deterministic. Any determinism of your hidden variable theory, for example, must stay beneath the surface. It cannot appear on the surface, in the surface probabilities. And we've seen that if we want to discern non-signaling correlations from more general ones, it can be done by a very similar inequality as the CCH function. And if we apply this to the case of perfect correlations and perfect anti-correlations, for all measurement directions, such a no-signaling theory, which treats both particles identically, must have flat or uniform local marginals. Okay, I hope to have shown that even in the simplest case, still some new inequalities and new results can be obtained. Thank you.
Can you show in the slide where you have the statement of the theorem? Because you write
this
the
one?
Probabilities right. It's not after that. Right, in the proof. So this that probability there, are you implying the P deterministic? Right. Are you implying, is there an unwritten lambda, or is it marginalized with respect to lambda?
It's marginalized. This is for the surface probabilities, what I call.
So it doesn't matter if you assume, for example, that the distribution of lambda depends on A and B. Actually depends. So sort of backwards of
yes.
A. Okay.
This theorem holds, say, on the surface. So below the surface, there might be non-locality or indeterminism or whatever you like. But at the surface, if it's local and deterministic, if it's deterministic and no signaling, it must be local at the surface.
Philip. Could you contrast this result that you've proved with Massenet's result? Because it looks very similar to something that Massenet's proved.
Yeah.
So are you quoting his results, or are you saying that this is something new?
No, I think I've done something new, yes. What they've shown is... let me see if I can explain. Do you know exactly the Massenet result again? Sorry.
It's been a while. But I remember it being very much this. I thought it was exactly what the statement is that you're making. If you have no signaling and you have non-locality, non-local correlations, then you can't have determinism as well.
And they do that for the surface as well?
Everything is surface in the paper that I saw. But anyway, we can discuss this later.
No.
It looks very similar.
Yeah, like I was pointing to it, so that's why I put it there, but
right.
I must look into it.
Right.
Okay.
John.
Going to what you were discussing previously, where we've got orthogonal measurements, you get a tighter band than just the ordinary Galilean quality.
This one?
Yeah, root 2. And so you can use that for entanglement detection.
Yes.
You
can see the entangling witness as well. Yes.
So, just say you were performing such an experiment. Do you have to assume that your measurements are orthogonal? Or can you actually detect, prove that they're orthogonal as you collect data? Because it seems if you had separable states to start with, you can actually prove that you've got orthogonal measurements. But you can't assume that you've got separable states, because that's what you're testing.
In order for this to apply, with the strict upper bound square root 2, they have to be orthogonal. But I've also tried to see what happens if the non-orthogonality cannot be guaranteed. Say there's a minimal distance between the two measurement directions. Or you go from anti-commutation to commuting. The observers, slowly you let them approach each other and commute. Then you see this bound slowly going up. In effect, this circle, if you look at it three-dimensionally, it sort of collapses on a slope and becomes this red circle again. So then you can allow, for example, say you quantize your uncertainty of whether or not your observers are orthogonal. You can still get an upper bound which is drastically below this value of 2. So this would give a better entangled witness, even if you don't know exactly whether or not your observers are locally orthogonal, because it's probably hard to verify. But about whether or not you can prove orthogonality by this, I don't know. It would be interesting. Yeah.
Okay. I think if it's a separable state, it suffices to prove orthogonality that the local measurement results for the two different measurements are independent, perhaps. But that doesn't suffice if you can assume that it's states in time. Anyway, maybe we can check that.
Okay.
I'm trying to understand the meaning of a couple of the results that you put. First, this determinism one. I'm trying to understand what determinist means. Does that mean, say, you prepared in some singlet state or some? I mean, just some state. We can't call it singlet because we're not doing quantum mechanics. We prepare the system in some state, and then we set up the analyzers, and then it's guaranteed what the results for that particular setting. It's guaranteed that we'll always get the same results for both of those. Is that right?
Yeah. Notion
what you mean by deterministic?
The notion of determinism I use is given the settings and the hidden variables.
But there's no hidden variable. This is just a surface thing.
Then it's only dependent on the settings.
So those same settings will always give the same answer. So that's an extremely strong.
It's a strong form of determinism at the surface, right? So given your settings, the outcomes are determined.
The analog would be like you in quantum mechanics, you specify psi, and then you'd always get the same answer once you set the.
And that, of course, in quantum mechanics, that doesn't hold always.
No, that's not true.
And so that's an instance of the theory. It's non quantum mechanics is no signaling, it's non local, but it cannot have deterministic results at the surface.
But you imagine there's some sort of preparation you can do that surface. Which, when you do it, it guarantees the same outcome always once you choose the settings of the instruments.
For example, in classical mechanics, not in statistical mechanics, but just say consider a single particle in a phase space. If you have complete access to the state, all observables are perfectly determined. Such a determinism is excluded by this.
Yeah, so that's my point. I think you mean to have a lambda in the proof of the theorem. It's a fixed once and for all. But you cannot be marginalizing, because I can choose a different lambdas can give me different zero ones distribution. They are zero or one, so it's deterministic, but they can be different for different lambdas. And then as soon as I marginalize, my surface probability becomes different from zero or one. You understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I suppose you have a lambda there.
No.
It just is fixed and implicit.
I hope this clarifies. Let's look again at Bohmian mechanics. You know, given the particle positions, that theory is deterministic. If you have access to the invariables, but at the surface, it reproduces quantum mechanics, which are probabilistic predictions.
Because I don't know the state.
That's right. Yes.
So that's a.
So what I'm claiming is that any determinism, which is, for example, present at a deeper in the vertical level, cannot show up at the surface. So that's why I call it Bohmian demon. Suppose you have control over those variables. You'd like to be deterministic at the surface. You'd like to have a deterministic theory at the surface. Then you cannot both be non-local and non-signaling. As soon as you're then non-local, you are signaling as well.
But you must assume, if you interpret quantum mechanics as the theory which you have at the surface,
yes,
you cannot just require that the result of your measurements depend on only on the apparatus. It's completely, you have some partial information on the preparation, which is the surface information.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I don't understand. You cannot have that the probability just depend on the settings. It doesn't, so whatever it's not longer a measurement, whatever I'm measuring, it's just...
Are you saying you need to have the state in there?
Something which is
established.
You're assuming
the preparations.
Right, a fixed preparation.
Let's consider these Popescu-Rorty forces. There they have nothing but surface probabilities. And of course, it's a black box, so there could be some mechanism inside. But they only consider...
Yeah, so a fixed lambda. That's okay. You don't know what lambda is, but it is fixed.
That's what you mean, yes.
Okay, so that's also.
Well, I don't know. I would have a second half to the question, but maybe I'll skip it.
Well,
I just wondered that the thing that was most striking about what you said was that quantum mechanics in some way did worse than classical physics in the multipartite non-locality. So I just want to understand, is the claim that you have some measure, some generalized CHSH Bell inequality?
Yeah, like the Merman inequality.
And you want to ask how badly can you violate it? And the statement is that some appropriately designed local hidden variable theory can actually violate it more than quantum mechanics. Can if you were to restrict to non-entangled, products.
Yeah, definitely. Quantum mechanics violates it exponentially for entangled states. But if you restrict yourself to non-entangled states, product states or separable states, it has to be below this lowest line.
So which is the opposite of bipartite, just two subsystems, bipartite. Quantum mechanics does better somehow in violating with entangles.
Yeah, like
sorry,
with entangles, it can go to two.
Does it do better or worse in the case of two? What's the relative thing between? I guess it's in that picture.
Also for two.
So it's also worse even for two.
Yes, for two parties. In order to get 2 square root 2, you have to choose your variables locally orthogonal. In that case, separable states are bounded by square root 2.
We have time for one more question. Cool.
So, first of all, I really agree with the nice results. The first theorem that you talked about, I think, is one of those theorems that keeps getting proven by different people independently and stated in different languages. I'm not familiar with the science paper, but I think that Eric Kalbokanti and Howard Wiseman are currently writing up something that's saying. But more than that, it goes further back. So Anthony Valentini, I think, has proven the contrapositive of the theorem. So the way he says it is, for any deterministic hidden variable model, if you have what you call the Bohmian beam, so he described that as, suppose you could compare a sub-quantum distribution. So you come to know the hidden variables precisely rather than only knowing the psi squared distribution. And you can still apply the Bell inequality. Then you could use that to signal. So the contrapositive is that if you can't signal, but you can still violate a Bell inequality, then there could be no Bohmian beam.
Yeah.
So then, I was telling Jonathan Barrett about all this, and he said, I think it goes back even further. And so he claims that some of the papers on parameter independence and exponent independence have a similar result in them. I can't corroborate that. But
do you know about whom that is?
I don't remember, but if you ask Jonathan Barrett.
Thanks. Too bad.
Okay, well, good, very little discussion. It's false.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.